nobody wants the company to see or monitor where they're web browsing on their personal time. And I think that's reasonable. On the flip side, I understand the security team is trying to plug all these holes and vulnerabilities and limit the attack surface. But I think we're doing ourselves a disservice in trying to completely control and restrict the end user, because it is just human nature. They will go around or disallow that kind of monitoring and control when it invades their personal space.
Frankly, IT. Straight talk for IT leaders everywhere.
Hey, this is Jennifer Tribe, and you're listening to Frankly IT, episode 71. PebCAC, problem between chair and keyboard. Wouldn't life in IT be so much easier if there were no users? I'm joking, of course, although I think we've all said that or something very similar to it at least once in our careers. The fact is, when it comes to IT security in particular, the people in the chairs are always the weakest link. If they don't follow security protocols, please, please don't click that link. It's really hard to keep things secure. And we know, they don't follow the protocols. So what if, instead of trying to crack down and force compliance, we design security systems for the way we know people behave? Today, I'm talking to Francis Dewing, the co-founder and CEO of cybersecurity company Rubica. Before Rubica, Francis was the COO at a company that specializes in providing cybersecurity to some of the world's highest profile figures, where they really had to balance celebrity needs for deep privacy with rock-solid security, and that's some of what we're talking about today. I found this conversation with Francis to be a really fascinating dive into the current state of security, where it falls short, and where we go from here.
You're listening to Frankly IT, brought to you by Avic Networks.
Hi, Francis. Welcome to Frankly IT.
Thank you for having me. So glad to be here.
We've done a number of episodes about security before, looking at it from different angles. Like we've done building a cybersecurity practice, ransomware, which kind of attacks are on the rise. But you come at the topic of security from what I feel is a very interesting perspective. You say that the corporate cybersecurity solutions that are in place today aren't built to be people first, and that that is a problem. What does that mean?
It comes down to this tension between the security team and the end user. What I see as a problem with traditional corporate tools today is that they're all built for the IT team and the CISO to restrict and control the end user. And there's reasons for that, but there's also this reasonable expectation of privacy and autonomy that the end user has, particularly in the world we're in now, where there is really a blend between personal and work, whether that's the network you're using, the device you're using, or just the fact that people are multitasking between work and personal a lot of the time. And so there's this tension between this expectation of privacy and autonomy when I'm doing personal things and this reasonable requirement on the security side for security standards. But the problem, there's a limit, I think, to where you can extend security unless you build for that reality. And I think attempts to control end users, particularly in this new remote working world, will fail and are sometimes inappropriate unless we build for the user first, frankly.
So what I'm hearing you say is that there is a friction between what companies want their employees to do or their users to do so they can remain secure and protect the network, and what employees or users are willing to do or able to do because of privacy or convenience and time and so on.
Exactly. I can give you an example. Even pre-COVID, there's been this move to BYOD devices, if not laptops, definitely phones. Very few people carry two phones anymore. And what that means is that, you know, you have this phone that you may check work email on, get access to work services, but you're also using that in your personal life. And just to be frank, nobody wants the company to see or monitor where they're web browsing on their personal time. And I think that's reasonable. On the flip side, I understand the security team is trying to plug all these holes and vulnerabilities and limit the attack surface. But I think we're doing ourselves a disservice in trying to completely control and restrict the end user, because it is just human nature. They will go around or disallow that kind of monitoring and control when it invades their personal space.
As an employer, you might feel you have a right to know certain things about what your employees are doing, like what websites they visit on company time, because you need that information to keep the company safe. But really what I'm hearing, this conversation has nothing to do with anyone's stance or philosophy on what employees should do. Because the reality is that if employees aren't comfortable doing it or they don't find it convenient, they're just going to circumvent the protocols.
Exactly. We know from studies, again, even pre-COVID, that 85% of people, despite what their acceptable use policies might be, they access unauthorized content, they download games, they go around and do all these things that they're not supposed to do technically. And I don't think that this is malicious intent. It's just that people are trying to be productive, get things done. They need to do what they need to do. And also, again, because there is this blend between personal and work, it's a fallacy to think that we can completely segment work from personal and require that very clear distinction, because it just doesn't exist anymore, particularly when we have a workforce that is mobile, that's remote, and that is toggling back and forth between their personal and work lives. Rather than pretending that that's not the way of the world, we just need to accept that this is how people interact with their digital space now. Let's build security with that in mind.
That is a staggering number. 85% of people will go around security protocols. I mean, you hear a lot in IT, your weakest security link is always your users, but that kind of really highlights the issue here, you know, when we're dealing with human nature. So let's talk about some of the current solutions that companies are using for security and some of the problems with those. I know you have some thoughts around VPN, and that's become extremely popular, especially with COVID. So talk to us about VPN.
You know, it's the default kind of reaction for a lot of corporate security teams when COVID hit and everyone was pushed into 100% remote work, was to roll out corporate VPNs to bring those users back into the secure corporate network. Because frankly, most of our security layers have been designed around the office infrastructure or the office network. I think IT teams recognize, okay, people are at home on their very basic insecure home routers. Let's port them back in and make sure they're secure. The problem with that is that assumes that your user is going to boot up their computer in the morning and immediately connect to the corporate VPN and stay connected all day long. And that's not how people use corporate VPNs. They turn them on to access their files or services and then disconnect and continue to do email, web browse, et cetera, on that same device. And this has actually become a threat vector rather than a protective layer, given that cyber criminals have now realized this. And so what they're doing is infecting people's devices when they're disconnected from the VPN and then using the corporate VPN as their tunnel back into the network. So they're literally using it to piggyback in and propagate malware in the corporate ecosystem. So this comes back to the fact that corporate VPNs were really not built for this 100% remote working scenario that we're in. And they weren't built for this kind of practical reality of how users actually behave. Krebs on security just posted a thing this morning about an uptick in this cyber criminal specifically targeting remote users that are using corporate VPNs for this very reason. And that's similar to a FBI report in a New York Times article from last month as well. So this is being used to target people rather than protect them at this point.
So if you're a company that's heavily relying on VPN right now, what should be first steps to getting that locked down?
My opinion is that corporate VPN can't be seen as the silver bullet and solution for remote working security. You know, some of this is making sure that you cross your T's and dot your I's in terms of how you roll out that VPN and patch it and make sure all the configurations are up to par. But the other thing is just like, as I said, people are not going to connect to that 100% of the time. And so what you need to have is a device layer security as well, acknowledging the fact that the corporate VPN is not going to be on 100% of the time to protect that device. Shameless plug, but that's kind of exactly where Rubica comes in. More and more companies are realizing that you need to have advanced threat protection, intrusion detection, prevention, anomaly detection, but that follows the device and that is more effective than just antivirus.
So tell us how this fits into MDM, mobile device management, and maybe even BYOD policies and how you set those up.
Yeah. The other big kind of emerging threat vector is mobile devices, right? Because our phones are just mini computers. We do everything from our phone that we can do from our laptop, and it's basically an extension of us. Yet, oftentimes, the only security deployed on phones is MDM. And you know, MDM is fine. It, you know, allows you to remotely wipe the device and restrict some app downloads. But there's a host of different threat vectors that it's not protecting you from, right? It's not detecting and preventing malware or trojans or data exfiltration and leakage. SMS phishing is huge. Actually, 85% of all phishing on mobile devices does not come through email. It comes through apps, social media, and SMS. So your MDM tool is not preventing any sort of those threats or man-in-the-middle attacks or interception of that data. So we've vastly ignored security for mobile phones with this, either this misconception that phones are more secure, which is just not true. IT teams kind of go, well, what else can I do? I don't have any other better tools. And so they're relying on a mixture of MDM and acceptable use policies, which we know people don't adhere to those.
So what is the way forward here? VPN is vulnerable. MDM is vulnerable. Acceptable use policies are vulnerable. What is the way forward here?
Going back to VPN for a minute, there's nothing wrong with VPN technology. It's just how we deploy these things, again, with this kind of people-first approach and just accepting the reality of here's how people use their devices, here's how people interact with their digital world. Like, rather than trying to pretend that people are going to follow policy, here's what they actually do. How do we build security around that? So for example, VPN is great to use to encrypt and protect your network connection, but it's not protecting either end from infection. You can still be redirected to a phishing site. You can still download malware. So you still need intrusion detection prevention type of tools that are monitoring that network layer data to look for anomalies. And there is technology, Rubica and others, that allow for that to follow the device in a way that's not restricting the end user and not requiring you to port everyone all the way back to your office infrastructure. The other thing that we didn't touch on is this kind of explosion of cloud services. This was a trend before remote work, but now with everyone working remotely, there's dozens of different cloud services and tools that people are logging into to do their jobs, to collaborate. We're going to move away from this kind of office, kind of intranet network-based security layers and really move more towards this idea that people need to be able to access their services anywhere, connect securely from anywhere, and know that all of those layers, their accounts, their devices, and their network connection are all secure.
You're listening to Frankly IT, brought to you by Avic Networks.
Yeah, so you mentioned the layers, device layer, network layer, account layer. So talk to us about what an ideal solution looks like at each layer.
The reason why all three of those things are important is because if you're only securing one of them and the others are kind of left exposed, then your security doesn't matter, right? Because they're all interconnected. So for example, your user is connecting to an insecure home network. You have a VPN to make sure that they can get to the cloud securely without any sort of interception. But if you have terrible authentication policies on your account layer, and if their device is infected with malware, then that tunnel doesn't matter, right? That's exactly what the cyber criminals are exploiting right now. But similarly, you might have perfect device security and excellent account layer security. But if you are connecting to an insecure or exposed Wi-Fi network that maybe is not segmented from your IoT devices or your spouse and kids' devices, then you have this cross-infection potential. In a nutshell, I think we have great technology available to us for the network layer and for the account layer, where I see people defaulting to old, outdated tools is often at the device level. We've got antivirus, which is kind of the default, but antivirus really is antiquated and doesn't work anymore. 93% of malware can evade detection by antivirus because of the nature of modern polymorphic malware. And then on the phones, we're defaulting to MDM, and basically there's no device layer security. And so I really advocate for doing network layer security on devices. So you're doing intrusion detection prevention, you're watching the network packets, you're watching the calls in and out bidirectionally to filter and detect threats. But if you deploy that in a way that follows the devices rather than being tied to a single network, then you've really got your bases covered.
And how do you do that without tripping over the friction that we've talked about, which is, you know, that privacy piece and that convenience piece for users?
Yeah, that's a great point. Just as one example, what we've done at Rubica is to make sure that we are protecting the user's browsing anonymity. There is a trade-off here. We don't allow even the IT administrators to see where the person web browses. Now, we'll tell you all the details about, we think there's suspicious activity, we think they're infected with this sort of malware, here's what we're seeing threat-wise, but we're not going to tell you where they were browsing to when they became infected. And that's really key. That's a key philosophical change, because only then will people allow this sort of security in their personal life or on these mixed-use devices. Frankly, any other thing requires us to choose between our personal privacy and our security. And I think that there's limits to where you can extend security when you approach it that way. We should all be able to have both privacy and security and shouldn't need to trade that off.
You know, it's really interesting because a couple of episodes ago, we had an interview with Rob Chevelle at Delete Me, and he was talking about these massive troves of personal data that can be easily and legally accessed by hackers. So in that interview, we were talking about how companies can help protect their employees' privacy from hackers. But here, we're adding a new layer. We're also talking about maintaining employee privacy from their employer.
That's right. A great case study on this is the Jeff Bezos phone hack. And that's not to pick on Jeff Bezos. I think he's like every other executive that I've ever known that has a phone that he accesses work email and work services on, but he has just one phone. That's his personal phone, or that's his phone that he also uses for his personal activities. I can tell you from the kind of forensics of that phone hack that nobody was monitoring that device. And that's because why would he ever want that? And that's at the executive level. But every employee, I think, has this reasonable expectation of privacy, even from their own company. And so that we have to balance that. I think the security community needs to move away from this trying to always control and restrict everything about the end user and instead bring them along more by building tools that work for people. And it starts with addressing personal privacy.
Now, do you find that this is a bit of a hard sell to executives? I mean, on the one hand, I would think it might be appealing because they are a Jeff Bezos type who are like, well, I'm the president or the CEO. I don't want the company or the IT administrator knowing all these things about what I do on my device. So something that keeps my device secure but maintains my privacy is a good thing. On the other hand, I know there are a number of executives who want to be able to monitor their employees, and not just for security purposes, but also for productivity purposes, which is a whole nother conversation. So what kind of reaction do you get from executives on a solution that kind of protects privacy while maintaining security?
Executives actually really buy into this because of the things that we're talking about in this conversation. The tension and the learning curve tends to be with the IT teams or the CISOs who are used to having tools that allow them more control and full control. Where we've actually found a lot of success is rolling Rubica out as an employee benefit. You know, if you think about it, there's these devices like these phones or these BYOD devices that are currently black boxes for the IT team because, again, because of this privacy kind of invasion issue, they don't have control or visibility over those devices as it is. And so what we're offering is, let's give you peace of mind to know that you have enterprise grade security and protection for those devices. The executives and the employees themselves really like this. It's more of a philosophical shift to work through with the IT teams to accept that having this is better than not having anything at all. And it actually extends their threat perimeter significantly.
So tell us how Rubica works exactly.
Rubica is an app that you download on all of your endpoint devices. So it's anything running Windows, iOS, OS X, or Android, phones, tablets, computers, you name it. And it essentially, it's a very lightweight app. It's not taking host-based logs like antivirus. It creates a VPN profile and it VPNs your device network layer data through our security stack, which has a host of different tools, DNS sinkhole, intrusion detection prevention. We have a SIM and SOC team that are doing anomaly and behavioral detection on that data. And so the promise to the customer is that you can, as a user, connect securely to any internet connection, Wi-Fi, cell, anywhere, and know that that connection's secure. But you also are automatically being protected from 52 different categories of threats because your data is being bidirectionally filtered. So we can block you from resolving out to a malicious site. We can block malware from being downloaded in. And we can also detect anomalous things like huge spikes that might indicate data exfiltration or indicators of command and control communications and different kind of indicators of malicious activity, and then quickly act and help remediate any downside effects there. So you're basically getting access to enterprise-grade security, but in a way that is really built to not interfere with whatever you need to do online. It's not a content filtering or preventative service in that way. And we have built specifically for this end user privacy component that's so key to adoption.
So this sounds, if I can sort of summarize the conversation we've had today, there's a friction between what companies want, which is security and protection of the network, and what employees are willing to do to help with that. And there's three layers you need to look at: devices, network, account. There are pretty good technologies available for network and account, but the weak spot right now tends to be the device layer, and that's where Rubica comes in.
Yeah, that's a great summary. The other point to just highlight is that it is a fallacy to think we can completely segment work from personal. People are mobile remote workers. I think remote work and BYOD and mixed-use devices are here to stay, and it's not practical to build security in this kind of control and restrict way anymore. We need to accept this kind of modern working world and build security for people.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Francis.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That was Francis Dewing, co-founder and CEO of Rubica. I'll put contact info for Francis in today's show notes, as well as a bunch of articles mentioning those stats she shared, the Jeff Bezos phone hack, and more. You'll find the show notes at avik.com/franklyit/071. And that's a wrap. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly IT, brought to you by Avik Networks. Own the network.